Ghosts, hauntings, UFOs, Bigfoot, aliens, shadow people, vampires, werewolves, demons. Blurring the line between the normal and the paranormal, Harrisburg Area Paranormal Society presents The Blurred Line. Here are your hosts, Sue Shinsky, John Curley, and Matt Haas.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to The Blurred Line. This is Sue Shinsky, and I am joined with John Curley and Matt Haas. How are you guys doing tonight?
Not too bad, Sue. How are you doing?
I'm tired. Hi, Sue.
I know. John was whining about wanting to get a shower, and he had 10 minutes. He couldn't seem to pull it together for 10 minutes.
No, I can't jump. I got to get wet. 10 minutes is not long enough.
You can do it, Rock.
That's a tease, man.
It is. But so we're really, really excited to have Mark Snyder on the show tonight.
How are you, Sue?
Oh, good. I was going to give you a nice intro, but you are all things extraterrestrial extraordinaire. I was going to put you as a Billy Meyer expert because I think you are.
Well, that's a nice thing to say. There's a lot to learn in this material.
Oh, my goodness, yes. I have, listened to your show. I used to help simulcast your show on another network, so I listened to a lot of it. And I'll tell you what, I mean, it's a lot.
It's a never-ending learning process.
It is.
I'll say that much, definitely.
Well, for people that may not No, I mean, people who may not have heard the show before or listened to your show, could you explain a little bit about Billy Meyer?
Yeah, let me do that. His name, people most know him as Billy Meyer. That's a nickname. His real name is Edward Albert Meyer. He's a one-armed farmer from Switzerland. He's about 76 years old now. He lives in a little town called Schmidrutti, Switzerland, which is about an hour outside of Zurich. What makes him so interesting is that he has had extraterrestrial contact since about the age of 5 years old. And he has a whole great ball of what you might call physical evidence. He has 1,200 photographs. He has 30 minutes of film. He has, he had metal samples at one time. There's about 100 people in and around Schmidrutti, Switzerland, who have either seen the craft or have witnessed really amazing paranormal events. But to me, what is the most interesting thing about this whole contact is the wisdom that these extraterrestrials imparted to Billy, starting at the very young age of 5 years old. He started to have physical contacts with these extraterrestrials, which would land in nearby fields when he was living in Niederflux and near Bulak, and they would come right out of the craft and talk with him. His first extraterrestrial teacher was a man named Sfoth, who was an extraterrestrial human who was about 1,000 years old. And Billy met with him for 11 years until he was 16. Now, this extraterrestrial, most people in the UFO extraterrestrial, a man named Sfoth, who was an extraterrestrial human who was about 1,000 years old. And Billy met with him for 11 years until he was 16.
Like delay.
Now, this extraterrestrial, most people in the UFO extraterrestrial, a man named Sfoth, who was an extraterrestrial human, who was about 1,000 years old.
This is very interesting.
Are you guys hearing that?
Him
yes, I
for
am.
11 years it's, until yeah, he was
It's
16.
Like it's playing back.
Now, yeah, it's on a loop. This extraterrestrial, most people in the UFO extra, a man named Spock.
I've never heard Skype do this, ever.
That's weird.
Wow, this should be like one of those shows that where they talk about ghosts or something here. I don't know what this is. I think we've got a haunting going on here.
Yeah, something strange going on.
Could you believe that? I've never ever heard Skype do that.
No.
Okay, let me pick back up. And Sue, you can interrupt me, and please do, because I'm like a talking head.
Oh, no, that's fine.
I just go on and on and on. And I don't want to dominate the conversation like that. If you want to go all the way back to the beginning, it's kind of good to get an overview. And that's the challenge in this material is really getting an overview so that people can see the big picture and not get completely bogged down in the details. Edward's first spiritual experience began all the way back when he was 4 years old, and he was at that time living in a town called Niederflux near Bulak, and it was one May evening. He was about 4 years old, and this occurred about 3 a.m. He got up for whatever reason, and he climbed out a window there, a lower window in his bedroom, and he basically could just almost step right outside. And he sat down on a bench that his father had built, and he looked up into this beautiful starry sky, just a breathtaking sky in Switzerland in May, and it was a beautiful evening. And he felt this strange sense of longing as he looked up at these thousands and thousands of stars. And then he heard his own voice say, "My life is made from the love of creation." And a little bit later, he heard his voice say again, "Since ancient times, I've lived among the stars." And then he had all of these memories flood back into his mind. And suddenly he knew what his purpose in life was and what he was brought here on the earth to do. And the next morning he tried to tell his family and friends, and of course no one really understood. So he went to the pastor of the nearby town, Bulak, who was someone he looked up to. And it was Pastor Rudolf Zimmerman, and he told him about his experience. And then he told Pastor Zimmerman that sometimes he gets these voices in his head. And Pastor Zimmerman said, "Billy, you should pay attention to these voices. They may be important." So one day, Billy had one of these telepathic messages to go out into the forest near his home there in Bulak, Switzerland. And then out of the sky came this silvery pear-shaped craft, which sat down in a field. And out of this craft stepped an extraterrestrial human man who was about 1,000 years old. He walked over to young Billy, took him by the hand, and led him back into the craft. This elderly man introduced himself as Svoth, and then he started to tell Billy what his purpose in this life was. And he also started to tell him about his previous lives. And he told Billy that his spirit had been on the earth for the past 13,000 years, and that he had been incarnating mostly as prophets, and that he had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And each time he had been a prophet, he had extraterrestrial contact, and he had a teacher, like Svoth, who taught him this ancient universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit. And Svoth told Billy that Over thousands of years, this original teaching of the spirit had kind of changed and had become distorted, but it was the original basis for most of all the religions of the earth, whether it was Christianity or Buddhism or Judaism or the Muslim faith. They all had their roots in this ancient extraterrestrial teaching, this universal teaching. And Svath told Billy that his mission in life would be to once again teach this information to the people of the earth. And Svath told him that eventually that the people of the earth would start to wake up out of their slumber, and that this teaching would one day bring peace again on to the planet Earth. So if you'd like, I could digress and start to talk a little bit about the teaching of the spirit or wherever you want to go now, Sue.
Sure, that sounds great.
Okay, like I said, you can interrupt me at any time. The teaching of the spirit, we could probably spend the rest of the whole evening talking about.
At least.
you've heard a little bit.
A little bit.
And you guys, again, can interrupt me anytime you want. So the first thing that this ancient universal teaching talks about is something that they call the creation. Now, the creation is the spirit that created the universe. But I recently interviewed Dr. Jim Deardorff, who's an expert in one aspect of the Meyer case called the Talmud of Emmanuel, which is, boy, we could do a whole show on that. And he called, if I remember correctly, he called the creation an it, which I think is a really good thing to name it as or call it by. And he described it as a superintelligence. Now, I think that opens the mind in a way that's important, because the creation is the universal consciousness. It's the spirit that created the universe. Now, it's neither good nor evil. It builds universes as a part of its own evolution. In a later writing, Billy describes the creation in this way. He says that the indescribable beauty of nature is nothing more than the visible expression of the love of creation. And one of Billy's later extraterrestrial teachers, a woman named Semyasi, she described the creation this way. She said, "Wisdom and love go together, and the creation and its laws are wisdom and love." So the creation is different than our idea of God, because the earth human religions have made the creator of the universe into something anthropomorphic. In other words, the creator of the universe in our religions is angry, jealous, and sometimes he commands human armies to go to war with one another. And
but wrathful, vengeful God, right?
Exactly. And that's very, very true. But the Meyer material says the creator isn't really like that. And they talk about something called the creational natural laws, one of which would be gravity. But they also talk about the connectivity of the creation. And Billy has a writing that's called The Goblet of Truth. And it has a paragraph in it that is entitled, "What the Truth Knows to Say." And it says something basically like this. It doesn't say this verbatim, but it says, "The rivers, the streams, the lakes, the stones, the bushes, the trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form that has a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time that involves many, many lifetimes. And that many of these creatures are connected by psychic vibrations. Now, I live right next to a state park, and there are certain parts of the forest I can go into, and I can listen to these creatures communicating with each other, whether it's the crickets or the cicadas or the peepers or the frogs or the birds chirping back and forth. All of creation is connected in an invisible way. And you may have seen a flock of sparrows, like in a big ball, hundreds of them, circling in the sky together, and then they all suddenly land on a telephone wire or in a tree, and they all work together simultaneously. Same with a school of fish. Same with a big group of deer that run together, and they see. We on the earth don't understand this connection to all things. The earth human has lost the knowledge that we are connected to all things. And we ought to be able to sense and feel the radiating love of creation. See, the human being has a consciousness, and he has the ability to make his own decisions. And unfortunately, here on the earth, we've made so many wrong decisions that we no longer sense that invisible connection with creation. Hence, we can take a bulldozer and run down a forest and not feel anything.
Right.
So that is what's happening to the earth human now. And I personally think we're devolving. I'm concerned that we're no longer evolving, that we're actually going backwards. The Pleiaren describe it this way. They see the people of Earth as an insane society rushing headlong to their own destruction, and that only a mass change of consciousness can avert the coming disaster in the third millennium. Now, one of the things that Svoth told Billy at a very young age is that we were entering into what he called a time of destruction, which started when America dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It's called like this. Billy was told that the current time is becoming an epoch of great destruction and annihilation, which will start with the criminal conduct of the Americans who will drop atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So, now, this first extraterrestrial teacher of Billy, this man named Svoth, was what most of the UFO community knows as a Pleiadian. Well, in 1995... when the Pleiadians left the Earth, they revealed their true identity. And they don't live in our Pleiades, which is about 400 light years away. They live 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. And they call themselves the Pleiaren. When they were on the Earth between 1975 and 1986, there were 2,862 extraterrestrial humans on the Earth from 12 different races. And they resided in a base in North America, one in Switzerland, and the other base was in Asia. The base in Switzerland had been here 350 years. Now, here's the interest, one of the many interesting things about this case. See, the Pleiaren say that their forefathers are our forefathers. And actually, these extraterrestrial humans had civilizations on our Earth. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years ago.
Where?
Well, one of them, there was this is going to be strange. The first settlers of Earth were extraterrestrial humans. 2.5 million years ago, there was a civilization in North America. According to the Meyer material, they destroyed themselves in an atomic war. And our Death Valley and Fire Valley are the result of that atomic war.
Huh.
Yes. The Pleiaron tell us that human beings on Earth have been here for a long, long, long time, and they come from five different sources. That we come from the Lyra Vega regions, the constellation of Lyra, from a different space-time configuration, from the Cirrus systems in a different space-time configuration. We have people here from Mars and from another planet in our solar system that was called Melona before it was destroyed and became our asteroid belt. And the Oriental races come from a planet that they call Kudra. So, and I'm going to, some of this might even be a little politically incorrect. The Meyer material says the native Earth humans were dark skinned.
Right. Makes sense.
The first, yes, it does actually. The first Lyrians came here, they came here millions of years ago. But there was a group that came here about 380,000 years ago, and there were 144,000 of these Lyrians. And they were escaping the constellation of Lyra. And the Lyrians had their own issues with wars. And these Lyrians, they violated certain laws that these extraterrestrials had. And one of those laws was not to mate with primitive people like the Earth humans, but they did, and they also abused the Earth humans. Well, another group from Lyra came here and took the ships and took the technology of these Lyrians, and they left them stranded here on the Earth. Now, the Lyrians were Titans, okay? They were 20 to 30 feet tall, some of them. They had space travel millions of years ago. They also, some of them, nearly mastered the limitless powers of the human spirit. So these people were incredibly advanced. The ones that were stranded here, they eventually died on the Earth. And the planet you die on is the planet you reincarnate on. So these very advanced extraterrestrial humans have been reincarnating on the Earth for hundreds of thousands of years. You see, but they've forgotten their technology, they've lost their spiritual powers, they've shrunk down to the size of Earth humans, but locked deep in their memory is the fact that this Earth is, to them, a prison planet. Because you can imagine what it would be like to be stuck on a planet that was millions of years behind you in evolution. That's truly like a hell.
Yeah, I can imagine. I
see that.
Yeah.
So maybe late at night you can think about that yourself and
that's
wonder.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
The job seems so much easier.
Yeah, maybe that's why we get all those help me and EVPs a lot.
Could be.
I can go on a reincarnation next. Sue, did you have any particular questions or any?
You know what? You're doing such a good job. I'm enjoying listening to you talk.
Yeah, I know. I'm sitting here. It's like listening to an audiobook.
Yeah. So I did have a question. You know, you said the planet you die on is the planet you reincarnate on. Who decides that?
That's one of the creational natural laws. Now, that doesn't make people in the New Age community very happy, because I know a lot of people don't want to spend any more lifetimes on this planet.
Yeah, well, the state it's in.
Yeah. But that's one of those creational natural laws. What happens? Here's the process. When your body dies, well, let me step back. Before we go into reincarnation, I have to describe what the human spirit is. I talked about that universal consciousness. Well, the human spirit is a tiny holographic fractal copy of the universal consciousness. And one of Billy's later contacts again, the woman named Semyase, probably his main contact, told Billy that within each human is the seat of the infinite, but few are aware of it. She was making a reference to the human spirit, which never dies. It leaves the physical body at death, and it goes into this etheric band of energy that exists around every planet, which supports higher life, like the Earth. The typical time on the other side in the spiritual realm for Earth is 152 years. But because we are overpopulated as a planet, many people come back before that time. So when we're on the other side, when we're in this etheric energy band, our human spirit is kind of in a sleep state. And somehow the creation takes the experiences of our previous lives and it organizes them in some way, kind of like a mosaic, or puts together these pieces like pieces of a puzzle. And at the appropriate time, the creation will take that human spirit again and put it into the body of a child. The human spirit goes into the body of the child 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. And then something comes down also called the consciousness block. The consciousness block forces you, that's probably not the right word. It essentially allows this human spirit to have a different personality this time. And it typically blocks the memory of the previous lifetimes. A lot of times people still have memories that leak through from those previous lifetimes. So you go through the process of this next life with that opportunity of a clean slate. Now, the subconscious mind has awareness that the conscious mind does not. So there is still a way the subconscious accesses these experiences. So you benefit from your experiences of your previous life in the new life. And don't ever feel bad if someone is more advanced than you because they just may be spiritually older. And by the same token, you should never feel superior to anyone. You could just be a spirit that's had more lifetimes. So that's the way reincarnation works. So you have to remember, after 150 years, the Earth has changed tremendously. The civilization that you used to live in has changed tremendously. Pretty much all your friends have probably been recycled back into the spiritual realm. So it's completely different when you come back. But you, in some way, subconsciously, you access these experiences. Maybe I should, let me digress a little bit into the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. These two communicate back and forth. Every time you have a conscious thought, that thought gets passed to the subconscious, which evaluates it and gives you kind of a thumbs up or a thumbs down. It's kind of like checking back with the memory bank, so to speak. Now, and you're constantly, these two are flashing back and forth. One thing that happens sometimes, you have in your conscious mind that certain thing is the rock solid truth. So you pass that down to the subconscious, and then suddenly, surprisingly, the subconscious gives you a thumbs down. It gives you anti-sympathy. In other words, it doesn't resonate with the subconscious. So you're kind of torn, you see? And what usually happens is you'll send that same information back, and these two get flashing back and forth very, very quickly. It's kind of uncontrolled thinking, and I'm sure you've all been there before. Something is really bothering you, and you just keep thinking about it over and over and over again. Even can keep you from sleeping well. The subconscious and the conscious mind are going back and forth. One of the things the Pleiaron tell us more than anything else, and this is part of the teaching of the Spirit, is that we need to learn to control our thinking. So first we have to recognize when we're in that runaway thought mode. And secondly, we have to be able to stop that runaway thought pattern. Now, they recommend us to learn meditation. There's many techniques for meditation. Some people concentrate on a flame. Some people concentrate on a flower. Some people visualize. I sometimes visualize a setting sun. And the key here is to keep your mind as clear as possible. And you want to get into the most relaxed state you can possibly get in. And it's when a thought comes in your mind, push it out. Another thought comes in your mind, push it out. And you completely clear that mind. No thoughts, perfect peace. You want to get all the way down to the point where you're just about ready to fall asleep. And stop right there. Now, if images kind of slowly creep in, just go with it. No problem. No verbal thoughts. If a verbal thought comes, you just push it out. Blank your mind out again. What you're learning is the meditation concentration. You're learning to control your thoughts. You're learning to set yourself back in a peaceful state again. Now, they tell us that most of our psychic illness, most of our mental illness, is caused by negative thoughts, which get repeated and repeated and repeated and pulled down into the psyche. Negative thoughts like anger, jealousy, bitterness, lust, fear, hatred. All of these thoughts can create mental illness. Now, they also tell us that positive thinking is not healthy. They tell us it's unrealistic. You shouldn't have overly positive thoughts. It leads to arrogance. It leads to unrealistic expectations. They tell us our thoughts need to be neutral, balanced, because the creation is neutral, balanced. So when your thoughts are neutral, balanced, you're kind of on the same wavelength. You're almost at peace again with this universal consciousness. So that's one of the important teachings of the teaching of the Spirit. They talk about thought control, meditation. The other thing that they emphasize is personal responsibility.
Aha.
They tell us, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say that's not a universal thought these days.
No, it isn't. Most people, I think we're programmed by our society to depend on other people, to depend on the government, to depend on our religious teachers, to depend on financial assistance, to depend on whatever. The Pleiaron tell us the more that we become personally responsible, the more we're in harmony with creation again. They tell us we're responsible for everything we think, for everything we do. We're also responsible for being good stewards of our planet. So personal responsibility, they tell us our religions have undermined our sense of personal responsibility. And we need to learn to depend on ourselves. And that's one of the keys to our spiritual growth. So, boy, I covered that pretty quickly there. That's kind of the teaching of the spirit, just at the 30,000 foot.
At that level. I mean, it's very interesting to me. And I know you had said, you know, our religions have taught us differently, but I remember something differently from things that I was taught when I went to church. It was all about personal responsibility and taking responsibility for your actions. And maybe it was just the place that I went. I don't know.
No, that's good. I mean, I think it varies.
Yeah.
I think that there is good teaching in our religion still.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there are some religions where they don't emphasize personal responsibility.
Yeah, it's all so about much. The group mentality a lot.
That's the one thing when I present the Meyer material, I never try to beat people over the head with it, you know? There's stuff here that it's just going to take time
for people.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There's going to take time for people to really... One of the things that I found absolutely fascinating is they tell us there are 7.5 million human civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy. Now, this is something that our scientists, for some reason, can't even wrap their minds around. Right. We have been programmed, I think, by the military-industrial complex to visualize extraterrestrials. I don't even like the word alien anymore. Extraterrestrials as these little gray people.
Yeah, the grays. Yeah.
Or reptilians. They're all scary. They look like, you know, what was that show? The 4th of July show where they go... Oh. You know what I'm talking about.
Independence Day?
Independence Day. Yeah. Sorry.
No. You're like 4th of July show. It was like ding, ding, ding. And it was searching for it.
Remember those extraterrestrials?
Oh, yeah. Or Mars Attacks. That was even better.
Huh?
Mars Attacks was even better.
I never saw that.
Oh, you have to. It's good. It's a comedy.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've also got the one called Battle LA. Have you seen that one?
I have not. Yeah.
I think one day, I think they're trying to paint extraterrestrial life in a bad light now. First of all, they tried to shut down this knowledge altogether. So if you were talked about this, you were completely a kook and you were going to be ridiculed.
Oh, yeah.
And they've decided now they're going to twist it and they're going to spin it now. And now I think they're eventually going to have this hoaxed alien invasion. You guys have probably heard
this.
You
think?
Yeah. I mean, you guys probably heard this a million times.
No. I've been listening to Art Bell a lot since he's been back on.
Uh-huh.
And he has been, you know, rallying to get the truth out.
Has he?
Whatever the truth is. Okay. Oh, he has. Say? Absolutely.
Dr. Wernher von Braun, when he was here, when he was alive, worked with a lady called Carol Rosen, Dr. Carol Rosen. She told him that, he told her, Dr. von Braun, he was the big rocket scientist that worked on the Apollo missions, told her that the controllers, you know, the rich, the powerful, the elite of our society would first have us fighting against terrorists, and then we would be fighting against meteors, asteroids, and then eventually they would have the quote-unquote extraterrestrial threat.
Huh.
And that it was all a hoax. It was all a rouge. It's the way they bring in their new world order.
Yeah.
With all of its control systems and, you know, they have to protect us. First against the terrorists, then against the asteroids, the meteors, and then eventually against the evil extraterrestrials.
You got to love that fear. You put fear enough in people, then they're going to do whatever you want them to do. So, huge controller.
That's what it seems to be all about. in this society is all about fear.
Fear mongers.
And what's so interesting, you know, the Meyer material is so different than that. Mm-hmm. It's it really has stretched my mind. Like, for example, I was talking about the 7.5 million human civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy.
Yeah.
That is tremendously good news to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not good news to some very religious people. But, you know, I went through that stage. I kind of studied the Bible every day. I taught Bible classes. What I always wondered was, look at that tremendous star, the starry sky out there. There has to be intelligence out there. We can't be the only ones.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I must think it's almost naive to sit there to think mm-hmm. that, you know, there is no life out there in the vast galaxy or the universe itself, but, you know, a lot of people just shrug that off to, well, God made this planet and that's it.
Well, yeah, and very egotistical as well.
I like the way you say that, Sue.
Oh, okay.
A little hubris.
I like that. I like that. It's very, very well said. The Meyer material talks about the incredible numbers of different human races in the universe, that now it's a number like with 63 zeros behind it or something, that originally there were 79 pure human races created, and they are tremendously different size-wise. Like, some of them are only 16 inches tall.
I was going to say, what is a pure human race?
That's a very good question. Like, right now, they tell us, how can I put this without taking us so far down the rabbit hole? I'll spend the rest of the the evening trying to explain it.
Let's see, we got 45 minutes for you to dig out. So
we've already gone 45 minutes already.
Yeah.
Gosh, we barely covered anything. Okay. Let me try this. Let me see if I can pull this together. If we go back about 225 million years ago, there on the Earth was a very primitive mammal, maybe the first mammal. Our scientists call it Adelos basialis crontoni. It's kind of like a shrew. Well, over the next about 200 million years, it evolved into a primate. Now, the primate branched off two lineages, developed into the ape and into the human. So the native Earth human started to develop about 5 million years ago, roughly. Now, about, like I said, about 2.5 million years ago, we had some of the first extraterrestrial societies here. They called the native Earth humans the Evas. And we still ran around. I shouldn't say we, because it probably, well, it's very complicated. The native Earth humans ran around in packs a little bit like wild animals. Now, at some point, probably more than one time, the extraterrestrial component on the Earth mated with the native Earth humans. Again, they violated some of their own rules doing this. So there was kind of a hybrid formed. Now, it's much more complicated than this, because I talked about Mars, remember? Well, yeah. There was civilization on Mars. They had pyramids. They had lakes, rivers, trees, animals. They had all sorts of constructions. They were fairly advanced, probably more advanced than we are now. I would say quite a bit more advanced than we are now. There was another planet in our solar system called Melona Phaeton. We just call it generally, most of the time, Melona. It was also what they call a dwarf planet like the Earth. It had oceans and trees and rivers and
plant life, an animal life, and a human life. There was a great war on Melona. The people on Melona diverted an ocean into a gigantic volcano, which caused their planet to explode and become our asteroid belt. While those asteroids pummeled Mars, eventually life was lost on Mars. Some of the people escaped Mars and came to the Earth. Now, one of the creative natural laws that I told you about, there are certain laws that the universe has in place. One of them is reincarnation. The other one is that you reincarnate on the planet that you died on. Another creative natural law is that when a planet is destroyed, the spirits on that planet will travel to the next closest planet that supports life. In this case, was the Earth. So we got some people that escaped the catastrophes that occurred on mainly Melona and eventually caused the death of Mars. But the ones that didn't escape bodily came spiritually and now are part of the reincarnational patterns of Earth. So Earth is this incredible melting pot. Now, to make this even more hard to follow, the people on Mars and Melona were primarily dumped off here into our solar system from a higher intelligence in the Sirius system who had developed so quickly. They had bred out of themselves the ability to fight. So they created a human being with a shortened 100-year lifespan and an increased aggression to do their wars for them, to fight hostile life that was coming from other worlds because they had lost their fighting spirit. Well, they got to the point where they realized that their genetic experiment, so to speak, also had its downside in that these human beings with the shortened lifespans and the increased aggression at times turned on their quote-unquote creators. So a large group of these humans were brought to Mars, were brought to Melona. Now you can tell with the increased aggression of the people, they blew up the planet Melona. Anyway, this genetic manipulation came to the Earth through these people from Mars and Melona, and I think a few of the people were dropped off to the Earth as well. Mm-hmm. So we here on Earth are still suffering from this genetic manipulation. We have 100-year lifespans, and we still have this incredible drive for aggression.
Yeah.
It's part of our genetic makeup. We were genetically manipulated like this. Now, in Contact 251, boy, I'm jumping all over, which is much, much later down the line, Billy, he was told by one of the extraterrestrials named Pata that our scientists will find out which gene to tweak to turn off the aggression and which gene to tweak to turn back on our normal lifespans.
Hmm.
You see, humans have a normal 1,000-year lifespan. So anyway, that's a bit of a digression, but I find that foreboding. There is a certain aspect to the prior material. I mean, can't you see? I mean, don't you? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, to me, that's so obvious. I mean, I can sense that we're in that state.
Well, to be honest, I haven't done as much research as you have, and but I trust you because I know that you know what you're talking about. It's evident that you know what you're talking about, and it's fascinating to me.
Well, I'm glad you like it. I also find it very fascinating.
let me digress again a little bit into our history. Now,
sure.
The destruction of Bellona. How much time we got left? We got about...
We have about 40 minutes, yeah.
Did you have any particular questions, or do you want me to just...
No, you just go.
Okay.
Very interesting.
The planet Bellona was destroyed about 75,000 years ago. Our solar system looked like this. We had Mercury at that time. There was no planet Venus in that position yet. So the Earth was the second planet around the Sun. The third planet was Monona Phaeton. The fourth planet was Mars. And then I think it goes Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto. And then the Mayer people talk about Trans-Pluto and Uni. About 10,000 years ago, now this is after the destruction of Bellona, a comet came into our solar system. Now they call this comet the Destroyer Comet because it goes through other solar systems as well. It went to the Lyrians. It went through the Lyrian solar system in the ancient past. It came through our solar system with seven other smaller comets trailing behind it. Now, this is about, sorry, that was my dogs, about 10,000 years ago. And as it came past Uranus, it pulled off a moon of Uranus. That moon eventually became our planet Venus. It was deposited into the second orbit around our sun. Now, when this whole comet system came through our solar system, it really caused havoc on the Earth. It pulled our oceans way out of their normal position, and it caused this tremendous flood that caused a tremendous loss of life. Now, this is not the biblical flood. According to the Mayer material, the Pleiadians tell us that what we call the biblical flood was really 100,000 years ago. This flood occurred 10,000 years ago. And there was a group of people that were saved. There was a prince who had a tremendous remote viewing ability. His father was a king, Salduk. The son was named Sardin. He saw this great catastrophe 300 years before it occurred. Now, what they did is they brought all of this food stuff, all water underneath the Giza Plateau in these underground villages, and they coated the Great Pyramid with lime so it was watertight. So they survived this great flood, which occurred about 10,000 years ago. According to the Mayer material, our Great Pyramid is 73,000 years old. It was built, in their words, at a time when the celestial suns walked the earth. Now, remember I told you about these extraterrestrial humans that were on our earth thousands and thousands of years ago. Well, there was a group of extraterrestrials here from Orion. It's my understanding they were kind of in charge of the construction of the Great Pyramid. Now, there were certain things that the Pleiadian would not tell Billy because they said our society wasn't ready to know these things yet. One of them was the real purpose behind the Great Pyramid and what it was built for. But it's much, much more ancient than our scientists realize. It's 73,000 years old. If you look in the King's Chamber in the Great Pyramid, there are something like 140-ton granite blocks in there, and they're stacked on top of each other so perfectly you can't fit a razor blade through in between them. They're perfectly polished, so you can almost see yourself in them. These stones came from 500 miles away And we today can only cut granite, really, by using an electric saw that has diamond tips on it. So whoever built these structures, these monolithic structures on Earth, had a high, high technology. So we have the evidence for all of this here. We just haven't really realized it yet. So, like Graham Hancock says, we're a people with amnesia, and we don't really understand who we are. Now, I said at the beginning of the show that the teaching of the spirit was in this extraterrestrial teaching that was brought here in the hope that we could prevent this potential great disaster that we may be heading for. Because what has happened on the Earth is that we've had the rise and fall of civilizations that have occurred many, many, many times. So I think what I'll do is make a digression into the time of Atlantis and Lemuria.
Oh, cool.
There were people, and this occurred thousands and thousands of years ago. Some of the dates are, I think it's Contact Report 70 that says like 133,000 years ago, these extraterrestrials came from the Barnard Star. Now, there was a man who came here named Atlant, and he came with his wife, who was named Kariashide, and he came with something like 70,000 other people. Now, he was what they call, these extraterrestrials call, an Ishwish. So I'm going to have to do a fairly large digression into this. It's also known as the King of Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think I may have said earlier that there are 7 evolutionary stages in humanity. The first stage is primitive. The second stage they call rational. They consider us a stage 2 society, in that we are capable of rational thought. We don't always have rational thought, but we're capable of rational thought. Stage 3 societies are doing space travel in somewhat regular fashion. They're starting to learn genetic engineering. Religions are having less and less influence on them. They start to learn how the universe really works. Stage 4 societies are what they call real life. And that's when the human society conquers space and time, and they learn hyperspace travel so that these extraterrestrial societies can travel from star to star with very little time passing, almost no time passing. So they become true interstellar societies at that time. And literally, they become true genetic engineers, and that they can very nearly create life. Now, in the 5th evolutionary stage of humanity, some people evolve into what they call the King of Wisdom, or Ishwish. Now, these people master certain abilities that we would call today paranormal. They can do telepathy, telekinesis. In other words, they can move things with their mind. They can see clearly into the future. They can see into the past. They master the almost limitless powers of the human spirit. Now, Atlant was one of these kings of wisdom, or Ishwish, and his wife was too. And they led thousands of people here from the Barnard Star, and they set up a civilization on an island continent that was roughly between where South America is today in Africa, near the equator. And it wasn't long before these beautiful structures were being built on this island continent. Now, another man came from, I believe it was the Barnard Star as well. The man that many know as Muras, who built the city of Lemuria, which the Meyer material says was roughly in the place today that we call the Gobi Desert. And they built two underground cities, Agartha Alpha and Agartha Beta, underneath this great city of Lemuria that were connected by tunnel systems. And these two civilizations lived in peace for something like 1,800 years. Well, another Ishwish came to the earth, and his name was Eris, and he had a nickname called Eris the Barbarian. Remember me saying that the universal consciousness is kind of a neutral positive entity?
Mm-hmm.
Well, evidently, some of these Ishwishes, they... It's something that's really hard for us to understand. And the only analogy that I could make would be the things we see in Star Wars, where you see the Jedis and then the Emperor or whatever. So there are certain Ishwishes that stray closer to the negative side. Anyway, Eris was one of these. They called him the Barbarian. And he brought some 200 leaders and sub-leaders with him. One of those sub-leaders was a man, a very brilliant scientist named Semyasa. And this was during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. And he mated with one of these Evas, who was actually very beautiful. And the offspring they called Adam, which just meant Earth human. And Adam, my understanding, was much, much taller than us. I've heard 16 feet. I don't know if that's true or not.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. He was very large.
That's a good boy.
Yes. And eventually they mated him with another Eva. And Adam and that other Eva, that became the basis for Earth humanity. Well, Semyasa violated again one of the primary rules of these extraterrestrials, and that they were not supposed to mate with the native Earth humans, who were at a lower evolutionary level. Remember, I explained all these seven different levels.
Right.
So they like violated one of their major rules. Now, Eris, being the quote unquote barbarian, was enraged by this, and he killed some of his leaders and sub leaders, and he actually banished some of them. Well, this whole story was the beginning of a lot of turmoil that got stirred up between Atlantis and Lemuria. Eris eventually got forced off the earth, but he came back and he got this great war started between Atlantis and Lemuria. And the Atlanteans evidently struck first. And they had very powerful laser weapons. They melted the city of Lemuria to the ground. A few of the Lemurians escaped, and they went to our asteroid belt, took one of the broken pieces of that planet, Melona, attached a drive system to it, and steered it back to the Earth like some kind of great weapon. Well, as it got into the higher atmosphere in the Earth, it created this horrific howling type of sound, which was heard all over the place. And they were aiming it at the island continent of Atlantis. Well, it kind of exploded somewhere up in the atmosphere. And many pieces rained down like a shotgun blast. Well, there were two major pieces, and they splashed into the Atlantic Ocean, caused a giant tsunami wave, and slammed into the floor of the Atlantic Ocean. And they triggered all of these undersea volcanoes, and it caused earthquakes everywhere. Atlantis sank beneath the waves. The Earth had a pole shift. It caused just a tremendous, tremendous disaster on the Earth. Okay? That was in the last great society on the Earth. And over the thousands and thousands and thousands of years, slowly, our ecosystem recovered. The few humans that were still here, they forgot all about Atlantis and Lemuria. You know, they lost their history. They lost their knowledge. We were back to the Stone Age, and we were just climbing out of the rubble of Atlantis and Lemuria. And this is the beginning of society, our society today. At least according to my material, is. Well, another one of these Ishwishes came to the Earth, and he was one of the descendants of that original Eris the Barbarian. His name was Eris the 11th. And he had a son, and Eris the 11th kind of set himself up as ruler over these primitive Earth people. Who didn't really know anything? You know, they had probably spent, you know, hundreds of years just barely surviving. So all the knowledge of Atlantis and Lemuria had been lost. So these very powerful extraterrestrial leaders took advantage of the Earth humans, and they posed as the creator of the universe. And that's where the term God got started on Earth. And I'll just read you some of the names of these rulers quickly. Eris the 11th had a son who he named Jehovan. Jehovan ruled the earth until 3,660 years ago. Jehovan was murdered by his son Jehave some 340 years into his father's reign. Jehave was a megamaniacal, just like his father, and he proclaimed himself to be the creator. Well, Jehave had a son, Erisane. Now, Erisane eventually murdered his father. He was forced off the earth, but he returned. Now, Erisane is very important because he set up something called the Giza Intelligences. Okay? The Giza Intelligences were headquartered far beneath the Giza Plateau, and even the great remote viewer, Edgar Cayce, remote viewed one of their large spacecraft far beneath the Giza Plateau and the Giza Pyramids. Well, the Giza Intelligences, for thousands of years, how can I say this? They mind controlled the people of the earth through various ways. They had a technology that they used. They used a kind of telepathic mind control of the earth. They also used religions mm-hmm. to control people the earth through various ways. I'm getting that echo, Sue.
Oh, you're back. You're fine.
Oh, I was getting a little bit of little lag there myself.
That was very weird.
That was my fault. My bad.
So, Erisane, eventually, his rule was taken over by Hen. Hen, who is sometimes called Jehovah, was forced out of power by Kamigal the First. Kamigal took over leadership of the Giza Intelligences, and Kamigal the Second took over for Kamigal the First. According to the Meyer material, I know I say that a lot, but these Giza Intelligences were forced off the Earth only in about 1976. I don't know if you see example of mind control or not, but to me it is very, I think, obvious. Our society has been mind controlled for many, many centuries. And it's very interesting. I think we're kind of going through kind of a period now where people are kind of waking up now.
I agree.
In Contact Report 9, it talks about this age of Aquarius that we're entering. It's called the Golden Age. And I'll read a little something here. It says, in this respect, I must first explain the religious interpretations concerning this epoch are wrong. A certain irresponsible fanaticism treats this as the religiously proclaimed final days. By no means is this new age a final time, because in truth it brings real life. This epoch enables everything to develop to its highest potential, including spirit, according to providence. But it will take many centuries after ending this period to reach these advanced levels. Now, according to my material, this epoch began in about 1844, and the culmination of the period will be in 2028. But it'll be many, many centuries until we really, truly evolve. But the good news is, we are in this age, and we do have the opportunity to evolve and become one of these advanced societies. And I certainly hope that that's the case, and I hope we're not going to repeat this cycle of destruction that we've been on for quite some time now. Did that make any sense, or did
it makes sense to me?
Good. There's a whole lot of material here in the Meyer material. Like I said earlier, feel free to interrupt me at any time. Billy's first contacts, the first period of contacts were 11 years, were with Svoth. The next 11 years of contacts, he from about 16 years old to about 27 years old, he met with a woman named Asket from the Tao universe. Okay, I'll have to digress a little bit here and explain what the Tao universe is. According to the Meyer material, 46 trillion years ago, the Big Bang occurred. Mm-hmm. They call it the Zohar, or the Sohar. It's this bright, intelligent light which appeared. Now, our universe was created in a parallel universe. They call our universe the Dern universe. They call the parallel universe the Tao universe. The humans that came to the Milky Way galaxy came here about 26 million years ago from a galaxy called the Lyran galaxy, which was dying, they say. So they they read something like this. It says, Nokodemian brought his people from the depths of the known universe about 26 million years ago, and they settled in the oldest space-time shifted regions of the Lyra Vega system. So the woman Asket was, her people are called the Timmers. The Timmers descended from these Lyrians, and they eventually went into this Tao universe. Asket was Billy's teacher, like I said, for the next 11 years. She taught him about these Giza intelligences and also took him on some very strange time travel trips. Now, Billy then went through about 11 years of no contacts. During that time, he had his great bus accident where he lost his left arm. During this time, he met his wife. And they moved back to Switzerland, back to Schmidrutti, Switzerland. And his contacts picked up in 1975. His contacts with Semyasi started. Semyasi was a 350-year-old Plearian woman. She was halfway to becoming an Ishwish. And That was the time when Billy started taking his photographs. You probably seen some of his photographs, haven't you, Sue?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He took something like 1,200 photographs of Semyonov's ship all around his, all around Shmidruti there. I know we're getting close on time here, but I'll try to describe this briefly. This is probably the most dramatic experience he had with Semyonov. She took him on a tour of our solar system. They went to Mercury, to Venus, to Jupiter, to Saturn, Mars. Interesting, he photographed, one of his photographs is looking out a port on the ship at a satellite with American flag on it, a large satellite type of structure orbiting Mars. They also came back to the Earth, and this was the time of the last Apollo mission. It was the time when the Apollo-Soyuz hookup took place, where the Russian capsule and the last American capsule kind of hooked up there in orbit. And from there, they left the Earth orbit, and they went out deeper into our solar system, and I think somewhere near Jupiter. I don't remember exactly, but I think maybe somewhere near Jupiter, the great Pleiaren mothership was out there, and it looked like this metallic sphere in space. It's about 17 kilometers in diameter. It's taller than the tallest mountain on Earth. It has within it something like a city, and it also has within it like this giant park. Anyway, as Semyonov is bringing her ship closer to this tremendous metallic sphere, this little passage opens up in it like a little door, and she flies her ships through this doorway, and it closes behind her. And she's inside this tremendous ship that just goes on for miles and miles. And she sees this hangar area where there's other hundreds of beam ships. And she lands her beam ship there in that hangar. And Edward and her step out of the craft, and they start to walk through this hangar. And as they come out of this hangar, they go into this area where there's a beautiful garden. This is this beautiful garden with, it's like a Garden of Eden. It goes on for miles. It has rolling hills and all sorts of tremendous, tremendously beautiful plants. So Billy and Semyonov are walking through what's something like a Garden of Eden for like 10 or 15 minutes, and then kind of a shuttle appears over them, and it kind of comes down to where they are. It's kind of a robotic shuttle, and they both get into this shuttle, and it takes them vertically in the ship. Now, the bottom of this ship is this great circular sphere, and then there's this long cylinder that comes up from the top of it. It's probably miles in length as well. So they're going straight up this shaft, zooming way up this shaft, and then they get up to what's called the cupola of the ship. And Billy sees this astonishing sight. He looks up on the roof of the cupola, and he can see stars. See, the Pleiaren had the technology to make metallic structure transparent, just like glass. So they're looking up at this tremendous cosmos and all these incredible stars everywhere. in this sky, and it's just breathtaking. Anyway, this shuttle moves through this cupola, which is the command center of the ship, and they move into this area, and then the shuttle sets down, and Semyase and Billy step off, and they see this horseshoe-shaped area where a man with a beard is standing in the center of this horseshoe-shaped area, and it's the extraterrestrial named Ptah, who is an Ishwish, who's in command of this great ship. Well, to make a long story short, they proceed to make these hyperspace jumps, and they're jumping from nebula to nebula in the Milky Way galaxy, from the Crab Nebula to the Horseshoe Nebula to what's called the Ring Nebula. And every time that they make one of these hyperspace jumps, everything in Billy's sight kind of turns instantly into this milky white. Just for a second, he feels this tremendous sense of peace and awe, just for a little bit, and then everything kind of reverts back to normal. And he asks Semyase about this, and she tells him that what they're doing is making hyperspace jumps. They leap from star to star, and what happens is everything within the ship turns into kind of an energy state. And what they tell Billy is that just for an instant, we are in that final stage of human development. What it's like. It's like when we're back in union with the creation. And Billy's thinking about this, and he's thinking, wow, this is a tremendous feeling. Every time they make one of these hyperspace jumps, he gets this incredible peace comes over him. And Semyase tells him that they're going to hang in hyperspace for 7 minutes to let him experience that, because all the people on the ship have experienced that before. And they told him it's a really just a tremendous experience. So they make this final hyperspace jump, and then they stay in this pure energetic state for like 7 minutes. And this incredible peace and awe comes over Billy, this sense of wonder, and he calls it the great unity. That's the only word he could think of. This great feeling of unity comes over him, and it's the most euphoric feeling he's ever had in his life. And it goes on and on and on. And then finally, when the 7 minutes is up and he comes back into the physical, it's just traumatic to him.
Yeah.
To that tremendous peace and awe and wonder. And they told him not to feel bad, because they all feel that tremendous sense of loss when they come back into the physical out of that pure spiritual state. So anyway, I know we're really running close on time now, but when they the final stage of their trip is to come to the border between the Dern universe and the Tao universe, where Billy gets to meet Asket again, one of his extraterrestrial teachers. And they give the Timmers back this time pod that they had on Earth, that they were using on Earth for some kind of experiments. And eventually, Semyase and Billy get back into her beam ship and come back to the Earth. Now, this was before Billy had his beard, you see. And the people in Switzerland are used to seeing him clean and shaven. Well, he's been gone for 5 days in real time. In his biological time, he's been gone for 5 days. They give him a special food which allows him to stay up for 5 days. He has a full growth of beard when he comes back to the people in Switzerland. And they're just kind of in awe because the Plarin brought him back only 2 hours in Earth time
after
he left. So they're like, how in the world do you grow a 5-day growth of beard in 2 hours?
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of immediately goes to sleep for like the next 2 days. But the people in Switzerland, many of the people in Switzerland have been witnessed things like that. Some of them have actually seen the ships. But many of them have seen things like that. Now, if anyone's interested in this material, in the few 3 minutes that we have left, I'll probably give you a couple books you can read. One of them's called And Still They Fly by Guido Mussberger. He's actually one of the people over there in Switzerland. Actually, I think he lives in Austria now, but he's been in Switzerland during some of these incredible events. Another interesting book is The Pleiadian Mission by Randolph Winters. Michael Horn has a great movie called The Silent Revolution of Truth. There's a website called The Future of mankind.co.uk. It's also known as the Billy Meyer Wiki. If you're interested in that, it's probably one of the best sources of information on the web. Just Google the Billy Meyer Wiki. I have a lot of information on the sopoliticsohio.us site. There's a Billy Meyer page, but if you Google Ohio Exopolitics, my website will come up and you can see a pretty good overview on my Billy Meyer page. So that's basically it. I mean, I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed.
Oh my goodness! Yes.
Yeah, it was a lot of good material for me.
Yeah, definitely.
It was very interesting.
And Mark, where can people listen to you? Because you have a pretty good show.
If they go to freedomslips.com. I'm in Studio B on what's called Revolution Radio. It's on at 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturday night. I have a show on Blog Talk Radio, which is, if you Google Ohio Exopolitics, you'll find it. It's on 8 p.m. Eastern on Sunday evenings. We cover the Billy Meyer case on Sunday evenings. So I kind of do my mainstream stuff on Revolution Radio, and I do the Billy Meyer stuff on Blog Talk now. And Sue has worked with me before on Blog.
I have. Yeah. Yeah, it's always a pleasure, Mark. Always.
It was my pleasure. I hope I get to talk to you guys again. It was
of
a great
time. Of course.
That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, thank everyone for listening. Next week, we really want you to contact us with your ghost stories because, you know, next week is Halloween. So I'll be putting something out on Facebook. Please stay tuned. Stay tuned next week and we'll talk ghost stories. So have
that
a great
fun.
Week. Yeah, absolutely. Have a great week, everybody. And good night.
Good night.